Hello, and welcome to Teacher Tales, a podcast from the spirit of teaching. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I invite you to join me and my guests as we get curious, explore, discover, and learn more about what is really at the heart of teaching. In each episode, we will hear the story of a teacher, what called them to teach, what are their greatest joys and challenges in teaching, what inspires them, and what are their hopes, dreams, and vision for the education of children. We will learn more about the greatest lessons they have taught and also the greatest lessons they have learned. No checklists, no standards, no reports, no paperwork, and no data. Just stories from their hearts to our hearts on a journey to celebrate what really matters in the true spirit of teaching. Well, everyone, I am so glad you're back here at Teacher Tales once again, because today we are going to travel internationally with my guest, because she has been a teacher all over the world. And I got to know her when we were teaching at the same high school quite a few years ago. And I followed her travels around the world and been very envious of them, but also lived vicariously through them. So I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell you a little bit about what she's been doing.
Hi, my name is Alexandra Michaels. I am an international teacher. I actually just finished my second decade in teaching. I cannot believe it. My first 10 years were in the States, in Florida. I started in the Florida Keys, and then I ended up at West Shore in Melbourne, Florida, where I met Linda. And then I moved abroad, and I spent 4 years in China, in Shenzhen, which is right across the bay from Hong Kong. Then during COVID, I was actually in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City. And then the past 4 years, I've been in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia. So 10 years of teaching in the States, and then I just finished 10 years of teaching abroad.
Wow, that's so exciting. So being a language teacher, I just have to ask, you know, how did you learn the languages where you were? Did you learn Vietnamese and Chinese?
Absolutely not. I
I
actually
love
did
that.
learn... Yeah, no. So funny story. When I went to China, I actually did take language lessons while I was in China. And so I would say of the three languages, Chinese, Vietnamese, and Arabic, I definitely knew Chinese the most. In Shenzhen, even though it was a fairly Western city, in China, you still need to know some Chinese at least to get by. And so I definitely, the language lessons that I took for about a year, only about once a week for about a year, but it was enough for me to get by and to be comfortable communicating, you know, bits and pieces. When I went to Vietnam, the school actually offered, the school often offers like a few classes. The language teachers will teach you a few things. And the first one that I went to, there were some students and then the Vietnamese teachers. And honestly, they could not even agree on how to teach me 1 through 10, because the tone, the tonal differences in the different parts of Vietnam were so extreme, I guess, that they couldn't even agree what they wanted to teach me. And so that's when I was like, okay, I'm out. Because if you all can't even agree, there's no way I'm going to get this. And then when I went to Saudi, there's so much English spoken that I really didn't need it. I've actually really never had, in the 4 years, I have not had an issue where there's been a language barrier. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Sometimes I feel bad about that I've lived abroad for 10 years and I don't know the languages, but I haven't needed to. So that's actually been lucky, I think, on my part, because I'm not very good with languages. I'm really good at English, but that's about it. So.
So for all my world language teacher friends, they're getting a lot out of this, because the fact that those teachers couldn't agree on how to teach 1 through 10, I mean, that's their world, you know,
yeah,
when you have colleagues and they can't agree on the curriculum or what should be taught or when it should be taught. And it becomes a little bit of a power struggle sometimes, but I think
sure.
That's in any academic area or whatever. So as far as teaching, the context and the culture of the schools and teaching, how, you know, what kind of culture shock did you have going from teaching in the U.S. to teaching in these other places?
So being at West Shore, obviously, you know, that, you know, somewhat magnet type school and everything, we had pretty good kids. We did not have a lot of behavioral issues and stuff the way that some of the other schools did. And that was pretty much the case when I moved abroad. So these are all international private schools. where English is the common language. So I didn't have to, I didn't have a, there's always some EAL issues and stuff. But when I was in China, we didn't have really any language issues at all. The highest concentration of students were Korean. And then we had a mix of European and American and Canadian, and only a handful of Chinese actually at this private school in China. So the culture shock was not extreme at all, actually, in the school. It was just in the out in the community, because the Chinese culture was a big culture shock. That Eastern culture is just so different from the West that there were a lot of, that was probably the hardest part for me there. And then in Vietnam, I did teach a lot more Vietnamese students. So we had a lot more EAL student issues and then student support for that as well. But again, it was all American curriculum and mainly American and Canadian teachers. So the students had to speak English. We didn't have, if they really couldn't speak English at all, they shouldn't have been passed the test, the entrance test. And then same thing in Saudi. Most, of course, of my students, most of the students are Arabic or from the Middle East. And so there are quite a few from Saudi Arabia, but then from Jordan, from Egypt, from the UAE, things like that. And then we have a lot of embassy students as well. So there is some EAL support, but it's more learning support than that. And again, I always applaud these students because all of them, for almost all of them, English is their second language, and they're learning all of their subject, core subjects in that language, which is just amazing. And so we talk about that a lot, that that's so good for them. So the culture shock is not so much in the school. It's definitely just more obviously living there. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the biggest shock in China, both because of the Chinese culture. And of course, it was my first time living abroad. When I moved to Vietnam and then to Saudi, I knew what to expect. So the roller coaster was a little less aggressive. but the first year is always tough for sure. And I've been a personal buddy at my school in Saudi for incoming teachers. And that's one of the things we tell the incoming teachers. And then when they get there, that the first year is tough. Like, because Saudi Arabia, I mean, is a very different. If you've been in Europe or if you've been in Asia, you get used to certain things. And then the Middle East is still its own entity. And so it can be tough for people. And I tell everybody, just get through that first year, because it was really tough for me too. And then you get to that first year and then people come back. I'm like, no, it's really easy sailing. And so friends of mine, like that second year, like, you're right. It really is a lot better that after the first year. So anywhere you go, I think is a culture shock. But once you're there, and if you can withstand it and make it that first year, that the next year really is a lot better.
Yeah, those are all great points and great insight. And I'm going to make a connection there for everyone who's listening, because teachers are moving around now. And, you know, when you change from one school to another, whether you're in a, you know, U.S. based school or a school in another country, that first year of teaching in a new context and a new environment and a new school culture, it's hard. It's very hard. You have to adjust to a lot of different things. And veteran teachers that make that shift from one school to another, and then they're hard on themselves that they're not mastering everything. I've been teaching 10 years. Why am I having such trouble? You know, it's because it's a new school. It's like moving from one city to another. And you just have to learn what your environment is and how to get around, how to navigate it. Or even with like a new textbook, that first year of using a new textbook, teachers struggle yet. They get frustrated. Absolutely. And they don't give themselves grace because they're like, I've been teaching 20 years. I should know how to do this.
Right. Well, and I haven't even used a textbook in 4 years. We used one for my math teaching when I taught math in Vietnam, but not for the science portion. And then I've been doing same thing. Actually, my first year in Saudi Arabia, I taught math and then I've been teaching science. And except for IB, we don't have books. Now the humanities, I guess in the foreign languages do, but the math and science, it's all, there aren't even any textbooks anymore. And that, yes, definitely took a while to get used to. It wasn't even changing textbooks. It was no more textbooks. You have to come up with all of it yourself. So.
Oh, wow. What a lot of work.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. So when I worked with you at West Shore, you were teaching science.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you went to China and then, you know, Vietnam and then Saudi Arabia, were you teaching other subjects? I heard you
yes.
say science and math, but
I've always taught science and math. So my teaching career has been such a roller coaster of what I've taught and then also age-wise. When I was in the Keys, I was a high school teacher. And my first year, I did teach math. I taught geometry and algebra and high school marine science. And then my second 2 years, I taught biology and environmental science in high school. Then I came to West Shore and I taught 7th and 8th grade integrated science, which is a lot of life science and then some physical science and chemistry. And then when I went to China, I went up to IB. So I taught IB biology and geometry. A lot of internationally, they like to put science teachers and or math teachers in both subjects, which worked for me because I'm pretty good with the math up through the geometry, and I can teach it well, but it's not something that relates both ways. So a lot of science teachers don't want to teach math, and a lot of math teachers don't want to teach science. So it was a good fit for me because I could go both ways, but that's not very common. So then when I went to Vietnam, I gave up the IB because IB is very stressful. It's very stressful to teach. And I went back down to middle school. So I actually taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, some math and then science. And then when I came to the Saudi, my first year was all 8th grade science. No, math, sorry, 8th grade math. Then my second year was 7, 9, and 10 science. So that was interesting. They called me like 3 days before school started. I had just gotten back into the country and they're like, "Hey, need to talk to you about your schedule for next year. Don't panic, everything's fine." So I went in to talk to the principal and he's like, "Here's what we need from you." So the middle school and high school are separate buildings and they have separate schedules, but they were short a teacher in the high school. So they needed 1 9th grade class taught and 1 10th grade class taught. And then I was set up to be middle school to do 7th grade. So they're like, "Okay, every other day you'll be doing your 7th grade, you'll be in the middle school. And then the other days you'll be in the high school doing 9th and 10th." So I went back and forth all year long between the two different schools and two different schedules. So that was a lot. And then the past 2 years, last year I taught 7th and 8th grade science, and then this year just 7th, and next year should be just 7th. So it'll be my first time in like 6 years or 7 years that I've taught just the exact same thing 2 years in a row. So.
You are just a poster child for, like really the flexibility of teaching and how teachers are called to step up and do things. You just, surprise for
Yeah, pretty
students
much.
and
And it was like, okay,
pre-planning.
I don't really have an option to say no, but when the school back started back for orientation and all the teachers were like, "I'm sorry, they're having you do what?" Everybody was a bit shocked. It was like, "What do you mean they are having you go back and forth between high school and middle school?" So yeah, that's
And every teacher can relate to that too. When you
sure.
think you're teaching something and you come back and there's schedule change and they're like switching teachers around. And now all of a sudden, what you had planned for, what you'd been teaching the past 2 or 3 years, and you had all of your lesson plans and
That's
everything,
right.
now they've like yanked the rug out from under your feet and you're starting from scratch. People don't
Exactly.
understand that. I mean, if you're in a business, if you're in a I mean, every day, even in nursing, is, different, and it is a stressful job. Or if you're in customer service or whatever, but you're not having to prepare a lot of stuff at home and over your summer, and then all of a sudden everybody says, "Nope, what you were doing, what you created," or it would be like if you had created an art masterpiece, they just come along and smash it with a hammer and say, "Start over."
A
Nobody
really good analogy. That's pretty much what happens.
Exactly. And they wonder why teachers are stressed, like the demand on their time and their energy and their expertise and their mental capacity and everything is a lot. It is a lot.
I see that meme a lot that talks about how many decisions, a teacher makes in a day and how many more that is than like a brain surgeon. Someone is like, "Oh yeah, that's true. They have like one thing they got to focus on. We've got everything else."
Yes, exactly. I've seen that same one, and it is amazing that and teachers are having to pivot in every moment in the classroom, and that builds your flexibility as well. When you have to, you're like they're just looking at me and staring at me. My lesson plans, flush down the toilet. I gotta pivot and come up with something else. That's why I love teachers. Teachers are great. I mean, everybody's got this personality that's different, and they impact children's lives, but also they're such a multidimensional human being that
True.
I feel, you know, is not appreciated for all of their dimensions and their abilities
Right.
and stuff. So
I
yeah, so I think every teacher listening would agree with that. So what's on the horizon for you now? Are you going back to where you were, the school?
I'm going back.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is actually a signing year for me. So we joke with international teachers that it's the only job in the world where you have to give your notice and pretty much quit your job a year in advance. Because of course we have to let our school know at the beginning of the school year. So usually for my school, it's the beginning of October, whether or not we're extending our contract or we're leaving and going someplace else. And then of course you spend the next few months, looking for jobs and stuff and lots of jobs open. But yeah, you don't know what's going to happen when you give that notice. And then of course, once you've given notice, you don't really get to come back and say, you know what, never mind, I actually would on keep my job. So that can be really stressful too. So this is actually a signing year for me if I want to stay or not. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to stay. It's a pretty good gig. I live, my school is on a compound in Saudi Arabia. There's lots of compounds, and my school is actually on one, and then I live on the compound. So my commute to school is a 7-minute tricycle ride. And so that is, it's super easy. It's a super easy place to live. The Saudi people are lovely. It's a great location for travel. It's easy to travel anywhere in Europe, anywhere in Africa. Because Riyadh is the capital and my family lives near Washington, D.C., there's actually a nonstop flight from Riyadh to Dulles. So coming home to visit my family is pretty darn easy. So I don't have any plans anytime soon to leave. Yeah, which will make this my longest post because four in China and then four in Saudi going forward will be more. So, yeah.
Wow, that's exciting. That's really
Yes.
exciting. So what was the biggest challenge that you had to the culture in China? Because you said that it was really difficult, not only because it was your first time
Sure.
abroad, but
Right. So they don't have Western manners, which is totally fine. They don't have to. But there would just be certain things, like for instance, my apartment building, the apartment gate that you would buzz yourself in was maybe 15 steps, 10 or 15 steps from the elevator. You would definitely see somebody coming in if you were in the elevator. Most people in America, most would hold the elevator, right? Oh, thank you so much. That's really nice. The Chinese don't do that. They just go. Now, if I was in the elevator and I saw somebody coming in, I would hold it. And then they would be so appreciative. Oh, shishia, shishia, which is how you say thank you. And I was always like, this is how this works. You see that? You do that next time. But I'm like, I can't help a billion people. And so simple things like that, over time, it was like, you know what? This is not where I need to be. And so 4 years was plenty. I actually got my master's while I was over there. And so that was really great. And then again, was able to travel all of Asia. There were about two countries that I didn't get to see before I moved that I was, sad about. But yeah, so with China, I loved the people, the students at my school, the people I worked with in my school, and it was just the culture that was a bit difficult. And then when I was in Vietnam, it was sort of the reverse. It's such a lovely country and they're lovely people. It was just a bit more difficult at my school. And then Saudi is kind of sort of in the middle. So my school is great, the students are great, and where I'm living is great, and it's easy to travel from. So they've been different experiences at all three places.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So where would you like to teach next if you decided you were going to end your contract and move on to someplace else? Is there someplace you're really curious about?
Yes and no. I've been so lucky to travel so much. Of course, that's also one of the biggest benefits of living abroad is the travel. Every break I go someplace new. And Europe would be wonderful. It would be fascinating. It would be a lovely place to live because travel in Europe is so easy, whether you just get in a car and drive across, to different countries or you take the train, things like that. Again, there's pros and cons everywhere, right? The grass is not always greener on the other side, things like that. And so at this point in my career, I'm, sort of looking at, what would be a lateral or an upward move. And there's not that many places. Like I said, I'm happy with what I've did in Asia. I don't need to go anywhere else in the Middle East because that would just be a lateral move. There's only one or two schools in South America, but unfortunately, people have said, I know of some people who've lived in South America, and travel within country is pretty easy, but it's very expensive to travel to other countries in South America. It's not a super easy thing to do. So, and because I enjoy the travel so much, that kind of limits that area. And I don't have any desire to live in Africa. Yet, at least that's not on my radar. Visiting, absolutely. I've very much enjoyed my visits, but not necessarily living. So that's the thing. That's why, like, for this year, for the signing, it's like I'm probably going to stay where I am because nothing else is really jumping out at me the way it had in the past when it was time to re-up my contract. So,
Do you think you'd ever want to come back and teach in the
no.
US? I didn't even finish my sentence
Nope. And I get asked that question a lot. My
and you
family and my best friends are like, "When are you coming back?" And I'm like, "Probably not until I retire because I am not going to teach in the States. I could not go backwards like that. It's unfortunately, it's just become untenable here. There's no way." And so, unless I retire or I change careers completely at this time, there's not much for me to do back here job-wise. So,
So you're teaching in international schools and it's mostly Americans, Canadians, or whatever, or at least in English speaking context and curriculum and stuff like that. But how about the expectations on the teachers? Do they align with like what's expected of teachers in the US or
Pretty
is
much, pretty much. Again, every school is different. Your admins are different. Expectations they're pretty much the same, often more demanding than you think they need to be. You're like, wait a minute, why are we working? We say at my school sometimes, like, let's work smarter, not harder. I think that's a common thing in education. Here we are, all these educated people, and we're doing educating things, and yet sometimes we just wonder about some of these processes. But I think for the most part, I mean, everybody has fairly similar expectations with the curriculum, with grading, that type of thing. We use, like again, I said American curriculum. So we use NGSS standards, Next Generation Science Standards, which is nice because that seems to be a much more accepted program internationally at a lot of the American schools. And because I know that program really well, I've been using that for years, that definitely makes my transitions to different schools easy or easier. And so that's something that going forward, if I was, interviewing at new schools, that would definitely be one of the first questions, of course, is what is the curriculum, as well as what the expectations of a teacher are, things like that. Some schools you have more duty, some schools you have more expectations for after school activities. I've coached volleyball at almost every school that I've taught at. And so, coaching is always, oh, you're a coach. That's great. How many things can you coach? Because they're always looking for coaches. So those types of things are the same almost anywhere you go.
When you said teachers are like, let's work, smarter, not harder. And I was like, no, really a lot of teachers, I mean, yes, but a lot of teachers are like, oh my God, another meeting. That's usually what they're thinking.
And sometimes another meeting, because honestly, that could have been said in an email. And so, right, that's when it's like, let's work smarter. Like, just jot that down. Let's get, we don't all need to be sitting here together, do we? Let's just,
But you made a great point about we're a bunch of educators and we should know about process and everything. And I'm a big process person. My daughters are big process. Well, our whole family is. And so sometimes we just look at, how things are going and we just scratch our heads and are like, couldn't you have just done that differently? And it could have saved some time and money and headache. And so it, it's frustrating. So what advice would you have for a new teacher? And would you, because I've had students that have graduated from West Shore and they went on to teach and teach for America or teach, in other countries through the Peace Corps and stuff like that. And they thought it was a great experience and they learned a lot. But would you recommend, if a young person wants to get into teaching and maybe go into teaching in, international schools, or would it
I
be
would. I would
to do
highly
that?
recommend it. Two of my closest friends in Vietnam actually were much younger, newer teachers. One was from Georgia, one was from Boston, and The one from Georgia had only been a teacher for 2 years. And so a lot of the international schools have they have a minimum requirement that you have to have been a teacher for 2 years before you go to these programs. And I think that's fair, right? You should not be a brand new teacher and also be moving abroad. That's just really more than anybody needs to have on their plate at one time. But yes, I think it's absolutely wonderful. And the contracts are pretty much, most of them are for 2 years. So you go, you experience it. The first year can be crazy. And then that second year, you're like, oh, you know what? I got this. This is pretty good. You can stay or leave. I've known plenty of teachers who've moved back to the States or Canada for 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 years and then come back out again. And then plenty of others who have been abroad almost their entire teaching careers. So it's not for everybody, for sure, but it is really an amazing experience. You learn so much about yourself. One of the things when I, first started telling people that I was doing this, and then obviously ever since then, the biggest comment was, oh, I could never do that. Or you're so brave. I could never do that. It was just like, really? Like you could. It is different, and again, it's not for everybody, things like that. But I mean, I have a house still in Florida that I lived in when I was at West Shore and everything, and that's still my house. I rent it out. My dog came to China and then Vietnam with me. When I moved to Saudi, my previous dog had passed away. I have another dog there now. If and when I move again, she'll come with me. And so I don't have children, but again, plenty of people have children and move with them and things like that. So it's absolutely doable, and it's such an adventure. So I would highly recommend people, and in whatever way that capacity, whether it's through like a private international school or Teach for America, any of them. Yeah, so.
Well, travel is to me, it's the greatest education you can get. And
Absolutely.
so you're traveling and you're getting an education and you're passing it on to your students. I mean,
Yes.
when I was at West Shore, I took students abroad every summer. And it changed their lives forever, and it changed mine
Absolutely.
as well. But thank you for all of the insights and everything. It's really
Absolutely.
exciting. I'm sure that everyone who listens is going to be so excited to learn about all the places you've been and your experiences. And you have a great sense of humor, and you're very articulate. So I think everybody's going to really enjoy that. So
Oh,
thank
good. I
you.
hope so.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Hello again, everyone. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I'd like to invite you to nominate a teacher to be a guest on the podcast and to share their story. All you have to do is go to www.spiritofteaching.org and fill out the nomination form. Again, that's www.spiritofteaching.org. Also, please share, rate, and give some feedback to help us better serve you in the spirit of teaching. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to having you back next time on Teacher Tales.